It end. He shrugged.
It never really began. We just got along and were compatible.
So you were compatible, yet it only lasted a few dates. Why is that?
I didn't mean we were compatible for anything long term. It took me a minute to catch on.
You mean compatible as in you were compatible in the bedroom?
It is what it is.
So you're saying it was a sexual thing only?
We went out to dinner a few times, enjoyed each other's company. I just like keeping things simple.
Really? Why is that?
I like my life better without unnecessary complications.
So you see women as complications, then?
Most women are complicated, yes.
I pondered that for a moment. So how does it work? You meet a woman and ask her if she's interested in a night of sex only? Bennett chuckled.
It's not quite that simple.
I teased. But if it's not that simple, it would be complicated. And you don't do complicated. He mumbled something under his breath about me being a pain in the ass and shook his head, something he did frequently when I spoke. No, seriously, I said. I'm interested. How does it work? Do you use a dating service or something? Bennett glanced to me and back to the road a few times. Seeming to realize I had no intention of letting the subject go, he sighed.
It's less sterile than that. If I take a woman out, at some point the conversation inevitably turns to what both of us are looking for in a relationship. I'm honest and say I want to keep things casual. But it's not hard to tell what a woman is looking for before you get to that point. So I avoid the ones that are complicated.
You're saying you can tell whether a woman might be interested in a sex-only relationship by just, what, talking to her for a few minutes?
Usually.
That's ridiculous. He shrugged.
Seems to have worked out for me so far.
I looked out the window, lost in thought for a minute, then asked my next question while watching him in the reflection. What about me? Bennett's eyes completely left the road and his head swung toward me after that.
What about you?
You've spent some time with me now. Tell me, would I be interested in a sexual relationship only, or am I too complicated? I turned back to look at him and watched as he raised a hand to his chin and rubbed. A wide smile spread across his face when he stopped pretending to deliberate over his answer.
You're as complicated as they come, sweetheart.
I opened my mouth to argue, then shut it, then opened it. I am not. He flashed me a look that said bullshit. I'm not!
You've been on a break with that moron for, what, 3-4 months now? How many men have you gone out with during that time?
My lips pursed.
So I take that as a nun, then?
I needed a break.
From sex?
From men, I frowned. Andrew really hurt me.
Sorry, but that just proves my point. You could have gone out and had sex if you wanted, a physical release, but you associate that with a relationship.
I guess he was right. I'd had a one-night stand my first year in college and hated the way I felt the next day. I suppose I was complicated. Now I was the one who wanted to change the subject. Have you ever had a girlfriend? I asked.
Define girlfriend.
A person you dated exclusively.
Sure, I told you. I'm not big on sharing when I'm seeing someone.
How long was your longest relationship?
I don't know, a few months, maybe 6.
Have you ever been in love? Bennett's jaw tightened. Clearly, that question caused some hurt. He cleared his throat.
You said you owe me one, right?
I nodded.
Let's change the subject to talking about business, and we'll call it even.
Chapter 17. Annalise, so great to see you. The guy who had just walked into the room to join the meeting came around and hugged Annalise. I watched his hand travel to just above the crack of her ass as he wrapped his arms around her, debatable whether that would be considered appropriate for a colleague. Tobias? She pulled back from the embrace. What are you doing here? I'm the new VP of creative for Star Studios. I left Century Films and started here a week ago. I didn't see your name on the agenda for today until this morning, or I would have reached out earlier. Wow, she said. Well, it's great to see a familiar face. How have you been? Good. keeping myself busy at work. Still perfecting making wine on the side. First full crop came in last week at the little farm I picked up last year. I may have to call your parents for some tips.
That's great. They'd be happy to help. You'll have to share a taste when your first bottles are ready.
I stood right next to Annalise, watching the entire exchange. While the sommelier, or whatever the fuck you call a winemaker, didn't divert his eyes from the woman in front of him to notice me, Annalise suddenly remembered I was here.
Oh, Tobias, this is Bennett Fox. Bennett and I work together at Foster, Burnett, and Wren.
I shook his hand and sized him up. Tall, not bad-looking, shoes shined, a good firm shake. Nice to meet you, Ben. Normally, I corrected people if they shortened my name to Ben, although never a client. Clients could call me dickhead for all I cared, as long as they gave me their business. But something about an immediate name shortener always irked me. You aren't my friend. I'm not calling you Toby and asking you to go out for a beer. We just met. It's Bennett. The extra syllable doesn't cost you more.
Why don't we have a seat? I think everyone is here, he said.
I waited for all the ladies in the room to take a seat, but apparently that was a little too long. Because before I could sit in the chair next to Annalise, you know, to show a united corporate front, Tobias put his hand on the back of the chair in front of me and pulled it out for himself. Not wanting to cause a scene, I moved to the next available seat, which happened to be on the other side of the table. The VP of production kicked off the meeting, giving a thorough overview of the company's business goals and target audience. I took notes as he spoke, and for the most part tried to pay attention. But every once in a while, I'd look over at Annalise. Twice now, Tobias had been whispering to her while she took notes. The conference table was probably about 4 feet wide. It made me want to find out if I could reach him with my foot under it. After the formal presentation ended, each of the star staff went around and added something. When the floor went to Tobias, he should have kept quiet because he didn't have anything of substance to add. Apparently, the guy just liked the sound of his own voice saying meaningless buzzwords. And to have an excuse to touch Annalise.
So I'm the new guy here at Star, obviously. And the team has done a superb job today of laying out not only who we are, but the brand we foresee ourselves to become in the future. One thing I can add is that synergy is important. Our logo, our marketing message, our team, our strategic alignments, they're just the ingredients to bake a big batch of cookies. Leave out the pinch of salt or the chocolate chips, and what do you get? Probably still a cookie, but it won't be as delicious as it could have been. Cohesiveness is the name of the game, and the campaign that wins our hearts will be the one that mixes well with everything else to bake the best cookie.
Womp, 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 cookies. Womp, 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 more cookies. That's what I heard. He droned on and on, saying nothing, really, until he finally concluded with a nod to Annalise.
I've worked with Wren before, so I'm confident they have the ability to think big and think outside the box to come up with something great.
He touched her arm.
We just need to give Annalise and her team the right baking list, and she'll come back with the tastiest batch of chocolate chip cookies we've ever eaten.
Annalise and her team. Great. What a dick. After the meeting was over, Tobias volunteered to give us a tour of the production lots. He offered his hand for Annalise to get into the front seat of the golf cart before walking around to the driver's side. I was relegated to the rear-facing bench seat and had to strain to hear him point shit out as we drove. After 4 hours of meetings and being shown around by the president of Annalise's fan club, the three of us went back to his office to talk. By then, his familiar touches had amped up in frequency, and I felt my face burning.
So, what else can I do to help you hit this one out of the park?
Tobias looked only at Annalise when he spoke, even though the three of us were sitting at a small, round table.
I'd love for us to sketch out some rough logo designs and run them past you informally before we get going too far down the road on our full branding pitch to the group, she said.
Tobias nodded.
Done. Send over anything you want me to take a look at. Better yet, come on back down, and I'll arrange a lunch with some of the key players and see if they could give you an early feel.
Wow, that would be great.
I felt the need to contribute something, or maybe remind him that I was in the room. Thanks, Tobias. That would be great. He acknowledged me with a polite smile and returned his attention to the woman next to him. Again, he touched her arm.
Anything for Anna.
Annalise caught me staring where his hand rested and quickly moved her arm. Holy shit. That's a guilty face. Did she fuck him? Here I was thinking the guy was just a regular, run-of-the-mill asshole who takes advantage of his position. But there was something more going on here. The two of them spent a while talking about crap they did together at his last studio. Of course, I couldn't contribute to that conversation either, which might have been the point. Luckily, Tobias's assistant eventually knocked to interrupt and remind him he had a conference call soon. See if you can push it back, will you, Susan? I wanted to get the fuck out of this office. I stood. That's all right. You've been so generous with your time. We don't want to overstay our welcome. Right, Annalise? Her brows drew down. Of course. Will you be at dinner tonight? I wasn't planning on joining, but I'm going to see if I can move some things around to make it after all. I forced a fake smile. Fuck off. Great. After Toby Boy got another hug, Annalise and I walked to the parking lot in silence. It felt like a giant knot had taken root at the back of my neck. I opened her car door and our eyes met for a brief second. My face remained stern. If I spoke right now, I'd definitely explode. We had a few hours until our dinner tonight, so I'd need to hit the gym for an hour or so to help blow off some of this steam. Maybe 2 hours. After she folded inside, I shut the car door with moderate success at not slamming it hard enough to come off the hinges. The minute the ignition started, I put the car into drive and began to move through the lot without programming any directions. "Do you know how to get to the hotel?" Annalise asked. "Nope. Why don't you figure it out and direct me, considering you're the boss?" Annalise frowned. "What did you want me to do? Correct the client in the middle of his presentation? You know that would be unprofessional." "Not half as unprofessional as encouraging the client to paw you." "Are you fucking kidding me?" Annalise wasn't much of a cursor, so I knew before getting a look at her red face that she was pissed, which was fine. That fucking made two of us. "He's friendly because we worked together before. He's also happily married, not that I need to explain anything to you." "You can't really be that naive, can you? To think that a little thing like being married makes a shit of a difference to some men?" I paused, although I should have just ended my rant there. "Oh, wait. You can be that naive. You're the same woman who thought meeting an ex at a hotel wasn't for a booty call." If I'd thought her face was hot with anger before, I was wrong. The red shade deepened to a near purple. She looked almost as if she'd been holding her breath. For a half second, I considered getting out of the car for my own safety. "Stop the car," she demanded. "Stop the damn car!" I came to an abrupt halt. Annalise unbuckled her seatbelt and whipped the car door open. We were still in the parking lot, and at least there were no other cars or people around to watch as she got out, started to pace while flailing her hands in the air, and shouted about what a dick I was. Maybe I was a dick. In fact, I knew I was. But it didn't make what had gone on between the two of them all afternoon any less acceptable. So I left her out there to stew while I did my own grumbling inside. After about 15 minutes, she waltzed back to the car, got in, and buckled her seatbelt. "Drive to the hotel. We have to pretend to be friendly in front of the client at dinner tonight, but there's zero reason to be nice right now." I restarted the car. Fine by me. 1 hour didn't help. 2 did nothing but make my arms and calves ache. Not even a half-hour power nap and shower with steaming hot water and a massager setting helped me relax. Every muscle in my body was still tense. As fucked up as it was, I was not dreading dinner. In fact, I looked forward to it. I couldn't wait to see how Annalise acted after I'd called her out on whatever was going on with that dick. At 7:45, I went downstairs to the bar, where we were meeting the crew from Star Studios in 15 minutes. I was glad our dinner plans were at the restaurant and our hotel, so I didn't have to drive and could have a drink or two. God knows I needed it. The VP of production and the head screenwriter were already seated at the bar. They extended a friendly welcome. "What are you drinking, Bennett?" I glanced at their glasses, both filled with amber liquid. "I'll take a scotch." The VP patted my back. "Good choice." He turned and ordered another of whatever year and brand the two of them were drinking and swiveled back to me. "We did all the talking today. Tell me a little about you." "All right. Been with Foster Burnett going on 10 years. Started out as a graphic artist and worked my way up to creative director. I spend too much time at the office, try to play a little golf on the weekends. And my assistant hates me because I once ate her peanut butter and jelly sandwich from the refrigerator when I was on deadline and working at midnight. The last part got a laugh. It was funny to say, and I assumed they thought I was exaggerating. It just wasn't funny that she actually hated me. Graphic artist, huh? Do you still draw? Does doodling while I'm on the phone with my mother count? The men's laughter was interrupted by a woman's voice. Bennett here is just being modest. He's quite the artist. You should see some of his work, especially the cartoons he creates. He has quite the vivid imagination. I turned to find Annalise, wearing a blue dress that fit her body and made her tits look fantastic, yet somehow was still appropriate business attire. She looked gorgeous. It almost made me forget the little war we were having, and that she'd just attempted a dig at me for my sexy cartoon doodles. I sipped my drink. Speaking of modest, when it's Annalise's turn to tell a little about herself, don't let her forget to mention her car hobby. She can take apart a car like no one's business. Hell, on her second day at the new office, she took care of a windshield wiper problem I didn't even realize I'd had until the day before. Annalise maintained the broad smile on her face, but I caught the little shiny daggers she shot my way from the slight squint of her eye. I beamed my pearly whites right back, only my amusement wasn't fake. I enjoyed screwing with her. I could have gone on all night like this, trading barbs dressed as compliments. It did more in 2 minutes to relieve the tension I'd felt than hours at the gym and a shower had done. After a few more exchanges, where she disguised a knock about my dating life as being dedicated to my work, and I hit her with a knock about her being naive disguised as her being open-minded, my neck loosened for the first time all day. Although the pain returned less than 5 minutes later when her buddy showed up. "You made it," I said. I watched his eyes do a quick sweep over Annalise before answering. It was too important to not make it happen. Yeah, sure. Within a few minutes, the rest of our party had joined us, including the board member who was friendly with the VP at Star and had gotten us the invite to come today and pitch for their business. We moved our discussions to a table over dinner, and I wasn't surprised to see that somehow Annalise and Tobias managed to sit next to each other again. Although I was lucky enough to be seated next to the board member, who would soon decide where the hell I lived, I couldn't focus enough to take advantage of the opportunity to properly talk him up. Instead, I found myself scrutinizing every gesture between the happy-looking couple sitting across from me. The way she threw her head back to laugh when he said something that was supposed to be funny. The way her mouth moved when she talked and her tongue wiped the remnants of wine from the top of the glass each time she took a sip. The feminine way she dabbed the corners of her mouth with her cloth napkin. The way the asshole kept touching her arm and bumping shoulders with her. By the time we'd made it to dessert, I'd started to have trouble coming up with anything to say and mostly kept quiet. The fun I'd felt at the beginning of the evening was long gone, and I was anxious for the night to end. When it finally did, we all stood around in the hotel lobby saying our goodbyes. Annalise waved one last time as the entire Star team exited the hotel, and then it was just the two of us. The smile she'd been sporting immediately morphed into an angry face. "You are the most unprofessional person I've ever met." "Me? What the hell did I do?" "You spent all night giving me the evil eye and glaring at Tobias." "Bullshit, I did not." She stilled for a moment and studied my face. "You're serious, aren't you? You really don't even realize what you were doing." "I wasn't doing shit." This woman was nuts. Maybe I'd been quiet, way less social than I'd normally be, but she was also sitting across the table from me. "You were sitting in my line of sight. Where the hell did you expect me to look?" "You were pouting and stewing like, you acted like a damn jealous boyfriend." "You're nuts." "You're impossible to work with." She stormed off before I could say anything more, heading to the elevator. I stood there a moment, trying to figure out where the hell she'd gotten me acting like a jealous boyfriend from. My adrenaline had spiked, and I knew there was no way in hell I was going to be able to sleep. So I decided to head back to the lobby bar and have a little liquid sleep assistance. "You acted like a damn jealous boyfriend." Her words kept swirling around in my mind, along with copious amounts of 10-year-old scotch. After two drinks, I was definitely calmer. But I couldn't shake everything that had gone down tonight. Things had started out well enough. The blue dress, her great tits. I'd been pretty composed when she arrived, even after our blow-up in the car this afternoon. Watching her talk, watching her laugh, seeing the man sitting next to her stretch out and rest his arm around the back of her chair during appetizers. I couldn't see his hand, but I imagined him trailing a finger along her back, thinking no one would be the wiser. Except me. I knew. I rattled the ice around in my glass and then gulped back the rest of my drink. That fucking finger. I wanted to break it. How dare that bastard touch her? The thing that crossed my three-quarters of the way to drunk mind next seemed to come out of nowhere. Keep your hands off my girl. What the fuck? Come again? I laughed to myself, trying to shake off the ridiculous thought. It's the alcohol talking. Had to be. Right? Or... fuck. My head fell back against the top of the bar stool, and I stared at the ceiling for a minute, lost in thought. Everything started to click into place at rapid speed. I shut my eyes. Shit. I was acting like a jealous boyfriend tonight. But why? The answer should have been obvious, even to someone as thick-headed as me. But it took two more drinks, and until the bar started to close down, to mull it over some more. Once I'd figured it out, I decided to do something stupid.
Chapter 18. Thump, thump. I rolled over and covered my head with the blanket. A few minutes later, there was the sound again. Thump, thump. I ripped the cover down and sighed. What the hell time was it? And who the hell was banging? It didn't sound like someone knocking. Padding for my cell on the nightstand, I picked it up and pushed the on button. Bright light illuminated the pitch-dark hotel room and affronted my sleepy eyes. I squinted a glimpse at the time. 2:11 a.m. I sighed. Must be people coming down the hall after the bars closed. I attempted to roll over and fall back asleep, but now my bladder had woken too. On my way to the bathroom, I peeked out the peephole and peered down the hall as much as I could. It seemed to be empty now. But the moment I climbed back into bed, it started again. Thump, thump. What the hell? I shoved the covers down and climbed out of bed to check the peephole again. Nothing. But this time, while I was up on my tippy-toes peering through, the thumping noise came again, and the door vibrated. I jumped back. Hello? A low voice said something from the other side of the door, but I couldn't make out the words. I checked the peephole again, only looking down through the viewer this time. Hair? Someone was sitting in front of the door. My heart started to race. Who's there? More mumbling. I dropped down to their level and put my ear to the door. Who's there? I heard the distinct sound of laughter. Was that? I rose to the peephole and looked down as much as I could once again. The hair looked like his, too. But I couldn't be certain. So I double-checked the safety chain lock before I slowly cracked open the door. Bennett? Is that you? What the fuck? His voice grumbled clearer through the open space. Looking down, I found him slumped against the door. He'd been using it to keep upright, and fell back when it moved. I pushed him and the door forward to unlatch the safety chain, then opened the door wide. Bennett followed right along, his weight pushing the door open until he was sprawled out, lying flat on the floor, the top half of him in my room, his legs outside in the hallway. He went hysterical laughing. "What the hell are you doing?" I asked. Then it dawned on me that he could be ill and in need of medical attention. Shit, I leaned down in a panic. Are you okay? Does something hurt? The smell of alcohol answered in the absence of actual words. I waved a hand in front of my nose. You're drunk. He flashed the sexiest crooked smile. And you're fucking beautiful. Not exactly what I expected. I stepped around his body on my carpet and looked up and down the hall. No one else was out there. Bennett pointed up at me with his entire face joining in for a dirty smirk. I can see up your dress. I had on a long t-shirt that barely reached my thighs,
and he was looking up at my underwear. I pulled the material tight at the hem and pressed my legs closed. What's going on? Did you think this was your room or something? You're two doors down, the room next to the elevator, remember? He reached up, and his fingers skimmed my thigh.
Come on, let me see him again. They were black and lacy, my favorite kind.
Warmth spread up my legs from the feel of his fingers on my skin. But my heart was smart enough to remember what he'd done earlier. I pushed his hand away, which he found amusing.
You don't like me, do you?
At the moment, no.
That's okay. I like you.
Bennett, do you want something, or do you need help getting back to your room?
I came to apologize.
That thawed my ice a little. But he was drunk, so I couldn't be sure he knew what the hell he was sorry for. Apologize for what? I asked.
For being a dick. For acting like a jealous boyfriend.
I sighed. What was your problem tonight? A goofy grin spread across his face.
Toby boy shouldn't have been touching you. I was angry. I shouldn't have taken out on you.
More of my guard came down. It's fine. I guess on some level I can appreciate your chivalry, wanting to stick up for me. He found that comment amusing, too.
Chivalry. That's something I've never been accused of.
Bennett reached out and put his hand on my bare foot. He traced figure eights with his finger. God, his touch felt good even there. He stared down, watching his hand draw, while he continued to speak.
I'm sorry, Texas.
For some stupid reason, the use of my nickname softened me. It's okay, Bennett. Don't worry about it. Just don't let it happen again, okay? He stopped drawing and covered the top of my foot with his palm. His thumb reached up and stroked my ankle. I felt it between my legs.
It will, though,
he whispered.
It will happen again.
My brain had become distracted by the way his simple touch radiated all over my body, so I didn't follow what he was saying. What will happen?
I'll act like that again. I can't help it. You know why?
I wasn't sure I cared as long as that thumb kept stroking my ankle.
Because I was jealous.
My jaw dropped. I had to be misinterpreting what he was saying. You were jealous about what? He looked up from the floor and our eyes locked.
About him touching you.
But why?
Because I want to be the one touching you.
I suddenly became acutely aware that I was standing in only a t-shirt. I need to put some pants on. The door to my room was still open, with half his body in the hall. Can you pull your legs in so I can close the door and grab something to wear? He managed to bend his knees and lift them enough so the door would shut. But he didn't get up from the floor. He also didn't let go of my foot. The sound of the lock clicking closed rang out extra loud, followed by silence. I remained painfully aware that I was half naked, Bennett was touching my leg, and the two of us were very alone in my hotel room. I tugged my foot from his hand and hurried to my suitcase to find the sweats I should have put on before opening the door in the first place. Digging them out, I rushed to the bathroom. Jesus. I scared myself, catching my reflection in the mirror. Bedhead, smeared makeup, puffy, tired eyes with dark circles. I looked like a homeless person. Mascara ran down one of my cheeks, and I leaned forward for a closer look. Was that drool dried to the side of my face? I spent the next God knows how long fixing myself. I tied my hair into a ponytail, washed my face, brushed my teeth, put on deodorant, and slipped into sweatpants. Then I had a long conversation with myself. You're fine. He's just drunk. He has no idea what he's saying. I took a deep breath. Nothing's going to happen out there. You're just going to help him up and help him to his room. But if he starts to rub my foot again? No, definitely not. This is stupid. Just go out there already. How long have you been hiding in here anyway? The better question is, how long has it been since you were with a man? Stop it. You're being ridiculous. This is your nemesis, a man you don't even like half the time. Tonight doesn't have to be that half of the time. I pointed a stern finger at the mirror. No more.
Then I took one last look at myself and straightened my posture before putting my hand on the doorknob. Here goes nothing. Literally. Because I swung open the bathroom door to find Bennett snoring on my floor. I couldn't go back to sleep. And since I had an early morning flight, I only had a few hours to kill until I had to leave for the airport. Yet a few hours didn't seem like nearly enough time to replay everything Bennett had done and said last night. I'd tried to wake him after I'd come out of the bathroom, but it was no use. He'd fallen into a deep, drunken sleep. So I covered him with an extra blanket from the closet, tucked a pillow beneath his head, and left him sleeping right there on my floor. Even while I'd gotten ready this morning, zipping my suitcase, the sound of the shower, dropping the deodorant on the tiled bathroom floor, nothing made Bennett flinch. I got the feeling he could probably stay that way until this afternoon, and he probably needed to, but then he'd miss his flight. Luckily, his wasn't until 3 hours after mine, so he didn't need to get up for a while. I phoned the front desk and asked them to give me a wake-up call at 9, but I wasn't so sure the sound of the phone ringing from the other side of the room would even wake him. So I decided to set the alarm on his cell phone, too, only I had to get it out of his pocket first. Crouching down, I examined his face, making sure he was still in a deep sleep. Bennett really was one damn handsome man. His complexion had a natural, sun-kissed color even in his drunken stupor, and I knew that if his eyes were to open, they'd be shockingly green against his skin. And what man had lips that full and pink? Of course, unlike me, he slept graciously. His lips were slightly open, showing a hint of his perfect white teeth, while mine would be leaking drool into a puddle on the floor. It almost wasn't fair how good-looking he was. But I had a flight to catch, and so did he, so I couldn't waste any more time admiring him. I needed to try to slip his phone out of his pocket to set an alarm. Except, when I went to reach into his pants pocket, my eyes snagged on a significant bulge a little to the left. Oh my God, Bennett had a hard-on in his sleep. Wow, that's a good size. I might have stared at it for a minute or two. I might have taken another minute to close my eyes and imagine what it might feel like in my hands if I unzipped his pants and reached inside. I might have wondered if he would even know if I opened that zipper, or if he woke up while my hands were wrapped around that bulge, what he would do. This man is really making me lose my mind. I shook my head and snapped myself out of my insanity. I needed to get on the road and set this damn phone alarm. My hand shook as I reached into his pocket. With every move I made, I kept checking his face to make sure he wasn't waking up. Ever so slowly, I inched his cell free. When it was out, I exhaled, realizing I'd been holding my breath. My hands were still shaky as I woke up his phone. I hadn't thought about the possibility of a password. Most people had one. But when I pressed the on button, no keypad came up. Instead, it booted directly to his home screen, and an unexpected picture of an adorable little boy. He was probably no older than 10 or 11, with shaggy, light brown hair and the biggest, toothy smile. He wore shorts and yellow plastic rain boots, and he stood on a rock in the middle of a stream, holding up a giant fish. I looked at the photo, and then to the sleeping man next to me. Could Bennett have a child? He'd never mentioned one. And he'd said his longest relationship was less than 6 months. Not that you need to be in a relationship. But it seemed like something that would have come up in our conversations by now. I looked between Bennett and the photo a few more times. There wasn't any resemblance that I saw. I might have guessed he'd have a few dirty pictures of women on his phone, but not a sweet little boy as his background. The man was truly a complete enigma. Luckily, while staring down at the boy, I caught the time on Bennett's phone. Crap. I needed to get out of here. I quickly set an alarm for 2 hours from now and went into his settings to turn the volume all the way up and make sure his phone would vibrate at the same time. Then I laid it on the floor, right beside his ear. If that didn't wake him, nothing would. I got up and grabbed my luggage, giving the room one last look for anything I might have forgotten. Then I navigated around the sleeping man and gently opened the hotel room door. He still hadn't budged. I stole one final look at the bulge in his pants. Well, Bennett Fox, this has been interesting, to say the least. I can't wait to see how much of it you remember in the office tomorrow.
Chapter 19. At 8 a.m., I'd already been in the office for hours. On my flight home yesterday, I'd typed up a summary of the information I took away from the STAR meetings and sent an email to 3 staff members, 2 from Wren and 1 from Foster Burnett, asking them to read over my notes and meet for a brainstorming session first thing this morning. When I'd gotten to the office at 5 a.m., Bennett's door had been shut, although the light was on. After catching up on emails for an hour, I went to get coffee and noticed his door was open and the light was now off. I figured he'd done what he often did, arrived at the office early, did some work, and then went for his morning run after a few hours. We hadn't had any contact since I'd left him passed out in my hotel room yesterday morning, and even though my curiosity about how he'd handled what had happened was eating at me, I had no time to waste today. Just as my meeting began, Bennett strolled past the bullpen. He took a step back, catching sight of us inside. His hair was wet, and he held a large Starbucks coffee in his hand.
What's going on in here?
We're just getting started on the STAR Studios pitch, I said. His eyes inventoried the people in the room, and I thought he might be about to question why I'd picked people to work on the campaign with me without discussing it with him first. But instead, when our eyes met, he merely offered a curt nod before walking away. Me and my hand-picked team worked the rest of the morning together. I'd had a dozen loose concepts for STAR in mind before we started, and we narrowed my list down to 2 ideas and then expanded on them, as well as adding 2 more that the session came up with. Our plan was to spend a little time on our own, each running with all 4 of the concepts, and see which popped when we met again in a few days. On my way back to the office, I stopped off at Bennett's. He had his head down, sketching something.
Did you make your flight? I asked.
He leaned back in his chair and tossed his pencil onto his desk.
I did. Luckily, I had the wherewithal to set an alarm, I guess.
No, you didn't. He continued.
I don't really remember much about the night after we finished dinner. Did I pass out on your floor after walking you to your room or something?
You don't remember knocking on my door?
Apparently not.
His brows furrowed.
Why did I knock?
To apologize for the way you acted at dinner. And tell me why you acted the way you did.
I don't usually have more than 1 or 2 hard liquor drinks. I'm more of a beer person.
He grinned.
Hope you didn't try to take advantage of me.
Disappointment hit me. He doesn't remember. I'd known there was a good chance the entire night would be a blackout for him, but I hadn't expected to feel hurt that he didn't remember the things he'd said. But of course it was better this way. You got confused which room was yours and passed out when I went to put a sweater on and show you to your room. I felt my face start to heat from my lie. Shit. Gotta run. Talk to you later. I abruptly walked away and went to hide in my office with the door locked before he could notice. Later in the afternoon, I spent some time tweaking Bennett's Bianchi Winery campaign. The copy he'd written needed work to reflect that the winery was family-owned and not part of a large corporate conglomerate, something Matteo took great pride in. Other than that, I changed a few colors on the labels for the new line of rosé that Mom wanted brightened up, and replaced the proposed late-night radio airbys with evening slots. I had plans to hit the gym on my way home tonight, to avoid running into Andrew in the morning, so I cleaned up my desk at a reasonable hour and packed files to work on for the STAR Studios campaign afterward. I grabbed the revised Bianchi art and copy to drop off at Bennett's office as I passed on my way out. Only my hands were full, and right before getting to his door, a few of the papers from the top of the pile fell. I bent to pick them up and overheard Bennett talking.
I'm not angry. This is just my face ever since Annalise arrived.
We'd had our share of arguments and name-calling, but that was between us, and it had felt more like a game of cat and mouse, not truly insulting, even when we were flinging insults at each other. But him talking shit about me to someone else felt worse than if he'd said that same thing to my face for some reason.
She seems nice enough to me, a man's voice said.
I thought it could have been Jim Falcon. Smart, too. That made me feel a little bit better.
Sort of a shame you had to meet the way you did, in competition for the same job and all. If you'd met at a bar, I think the two of you would have hit it off. She's not my type,
Bennett snapped. Yesterday, I was beautiful. Today, I wasn't his type. I wanted to be annoyed, but instead all I felt was hurt.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Smart, nice, and beautiful. What man would want that shit?
Thanks, Jim.
Fuck off, Falcon. Bennett's voice turned terse. If I'd met her in a bar, I'd have kept my distance after spending 3 minutes with her. Trust me.
I'd never actually been in a fist fight, yet I suddenly knew what a punch in the gut felt like. My insides felt a hollow pain. What had I been thinking? Allowing myself to believe his drunken words were a confession of feelings of some sort and more than incoherent drivel? Worse, I let myself start to think that beneath the arrogant beast was some sort of misunderstood Prince Charming. Sometimes a beast is just a beast, no matter how many layers you peel back. The sound of footsteps snapped me out of my momentary pity party. I turned around and started to walk in the other direction. Jim had moved closer to the door, so I could still hear him as I put distance between us.
It's been a while. Let's do happy hour Friday night. We'll find you someone mean, ugly, and stupid to drag you out of this mood.
The hot and cold relationship I had with Bennett took a turn into the tundra by midweek. Only this time it was me doing the instigating. Jonas had assigned the second account the board planned to judge us on, Billings Media, and we were both in the thick of working on early drafts of our separate star campaigns. Near the end of our weekly meeting, I mentioned to Jonas that I had an appointment scheduled for next week with one of the VPs from Star. I knew that would piss Bennett off. He glared at me but said nothing, and I ignored him and continued talking to the boss. When Tobias had originally offered to look at any early designs, I'd assumed both Bennett and I would take him up on it. But that was back when I was an idiot who thought the playing field should be fair so the true better person could win. After the crap Bennett pulled in L.A., and overhearing how he really felt about me, I no longer had any doubt that the better person was going to win. Me. I'd just returned to my office and picked up the phone to return some calls when Bennett barged in without knocking. The door was shut because I'm busy. He took an exaggerated look around my neat office.
Don't look busy to me.
I sighed. I need to make some calls. What do you want, Bennett?
Flying to L.A. for a lunch? Let me guess, you're meeting at a hotel.
Screw you! He glared at me.
No thanks. I told you, I don't like to share. Certainly not with Toby Boy.
I stood. Did you come into my office for any reason other than to pick a fight?
Your friend Tobias isn't taking my calls. Is that your doing?
Tobias hadn't even mentioned that Bennett had called. Absolutely not.
I walked over while Marina happened to be making your flight reservations the other day. That's the only reason I even knew you'd decided to go see your friend. Nice teamwork, by the way. I'd almost fallen for your we're one team bullshit. When the invite was extended for them to take a sneak peek at our work, I assumed it was a company invitation, not a personal Annalise invitation.
I leaned my palms on my desk and put on a saccharine sweet smile. Me too. Guess we've both learned a lot about each other since L.A.
Chapter 20. Well, well, well. The night just got a fuck of a lot more interesting. I sucked back the rest of the beer I'd been nursing for the better part of an hour and motioned to the bartender. Ever hear of a drink called a sore loser? I think so. Vodka, sweet and sour mix, grenadine, orange juice, and sugar around the rim, right? And a maraschino cherry or two. The bartender made a face. Sounds more like a recipe for a hangover, if you ask me. Yeah, that's why it's perfect. I motioned down to the other end of the bar where Annalise had just walked in with Marina, of all people. See the sexy blonde talking to the crazy-looking redhead? He looked down the bar. Sure. Can you whip up one of those drinks and send it down to her? Make sure she knows the name of the drink and who sent it? If you say so. And I'll take another beer when you get a chance. Our unofficial company happy hour had quite a turnout tonight. It was the first time both the Wren and Foster Burnett crew had socialized outside of the office. I'd guess at least 30 people showed up, half of them from the marketing department since Jim Falcon always organized this. I kept my eye on Annalise while the bartender mixed together the drink and walked to the other end of the bar to deliver it. She smiled and looked down at the fancy glass filled with pink liquid and then followed to where the bartender pointed. Seeing me, her lips immediately soured to a frown. Marina, of course, joined her in shooting daggers in my direction. Too bad I hadn't thought of it earlier. It would have been funnier if I'd had a PB&J delivered for Marina along with Annalise's sore loser. Funny to me, at least. From the other end of the bar, Annalise held up her drink with a frosty smile and tipped her head to me in thanks. For the next hour and a half, I attempted to mingle. But the more I caught myself sneaking glances at Annalise, the more I got annoyed. She, on the other hand, didn't appear the slightest bit distracted or even to notice that I had grown obsessed with following her every move. At one point, a guy who didn't work at Foster Burnett and Wren sidled up to her and started to chew her ear off. The asshole had on a brown tweed jacket with leather elbow pads and worn loafers. Probably a writer like her last douchey boyfriend or a professor of some useless subject like philosophy. Look, if you're thinking I'm jealous, I'm not. Get that shit right out of your head. Jealous is when you want something another has achieved. And Annalise has not and will not achieve anything over me, or when someone has something that's yours, and we all know I never have nor ever will claim any woman as mine. I'm just protective by nature, that's all. And while the woman might have worked her way up the corporate ranks to a position equal to mine, she clearly didn't know shit about men. At some point between throwing her head back in laughter and tossing around her hair, she excused herself from the now half-hour-long conversation she'd been having with Mr. Brown Tweed. My eyes followed her down the corridor I knew led to the bathrooms. I told myself to stay put, not go over there and fuck with her, but I wasn't a great listener. I raised my hand to the bartender, ordered another sore loser, and then walked it over to the ladies' room. I stood outside and waited until she stepped out. She took two strides down the hall and almost crashed right into me. Her eyes squinted so tightly it was a wonder she could even see. "What are you doing, Bennett?" I extended the drink. "Thought you'd like another drink." "No, thanks." She went to step around me, but I sidestepped in front of her. "Get out of my way." "No." Her eyes widened. "No." I grinned. In hindsight, that probably was a dickish thing to do, even for me. "That's right, no." "Look, whatever game you're playing, I don't want to play." "No game. I'm just looking out for you, making sure you haven't drunk so much that you're falling for the line some random guy feeds you. Clearly, your ability to judge a man's character even when you're sober is poor." Her face turned red. A fire danced in her baby blue eyes, and it looked like smoke might start billowing from her nose. I'd seen her pissed. Hell, it had become one of my favorite pastimes over the last few weeks to piss her off. But she'd never looked this angry. I actually took a step back. And you know what she did? You guessed it. She took one forward. I'll admit, I got a little scared then. Jabbing her finger into my chest, she started in on a staccato tirade. "You, jab. Think, jab. I'm, jab. A, jab. Bad, jab. Judge, jab. Of, jab. Character, jab." She actually waited for me to answer. I shrugged like a coward. "Well, you know what? You're absolutely right. I let Andrew string me along for way too long. Yet somehow, when I found out who he was, it didn't sting half as much as it did realizing how wrong I was about you. I was so sure you were just an asshole on the outside and a good person on the inside. I thought if I dug a little deeper, I'd dig past the dirt and find the hidden gold. But I was wrong. I dug through the dirt, and you know what I found? More dirt." Tears welled up in her eyes. I went to say something, to tell her I was only screwing around, and she stopped me with more words. "And you don't need to worry about me believing the lies of a drunk guy. I already made that mistake once. You know, you were really convincing, too. Telling me how beautiful you think I am, and that you were jealous of another man touching me. In fact, you were so good,
I stupidly believed the drunk lies you fed me even after you didn't remember saying them. That is, until I overheard you talking to Jim the other day and realized what a complete idiot I was again. Shame on me. But trust me, I've learned my lesson. Before I could say or do anything, Annalise skirted around me and back into the bar. I hung my head, feeling like an elephant had just sat on my chest. Fuck. What have I done? The next morning it poured. Not your typical April showers bring May flowers type of bullshit rain, but the kind that comes with gray skies and thunder louder than a bowling alley on league night. Couple that with the pounding I had going on in my head, and the last thing I wanted to do was go to a monster truck show this afternoon. I hadn't even drunk that much last night. Hell, I had my third beer still in my hand when I finally grew some balls and went to chase Annalise after she'd finished chewing me out. I'd thrown it against the outside brick of the building when I found her, just as she pulled away from the bar inside an Uber. Not surprisingly, she didn't make the driver stop, though I yelled after her. When I pulled up at Lucas's house, I didn't bother to dig the umbrella I kept in my car out of the glove box, so my clothes were soaked after making the short walk from the car to the front door. I knocked and hoped by some miracle he answered today instead of Fanny. The last thing I needed to go with a pounding headache and a rainy day trip to a loud monster truck show was a run-in with that woman. The door opened. No such luck. I hope you plan on using an umbrella when you walk with Lucas. I can't afford to get sick when he catches a cold. Shocker. She didn't give two shits that Lucas might get the cold, only that he might pass it along to her. I wasn't in the mood. I'll make sure he runs between the raindrops. She pursed her thin lips. He can also use some new sneakers. I ignored her. I'd long ago learned not to expect the monthly check I gave her to go toward anything Lucas might actually need. Is he ready? We need to be somewhere. She slammed the door in my face and screamed inside the house. Lucas! I preferred standing out in the rain than talking to her anyway. The smile on Lucas's face when he opened the door made me smile for the first time since last night. About a year ago, he'd stopped running into my arms, so I'd come up with a secret handshake just for us. We went through the 15-second-long hand-slapping, fist-bumping shake routine. Did you buy earplugs? He asked. I'd stopped at the store on the way over. Reaching into my pocket, I pulled out two sets. Lucas frowned. When am I going to be old enough to stop wearing these? Old enough? I'm still wearing them, aren't I? Yeah, but that's because you're a dork, not because you're old. I smiled. This kid could make me forget a bad day. Is that so? He grinned and nodded. Well, just for that comment, I'm not giving you my jacket to put over your head while we make a run for the car like I was going to do. Lucas shook his head again and scoffed. Jacket over my head. You really are a dork. Then he took off running for the car. Shit. I had about a half mile to go to get to the arena when I realized I'd forgotten the tickets. They were in the top drawer of my desk at the office, along with the early entry passes I'd bought so Lucas and I could go check out the trucks before the show started. Luckily, the office wasn't too far, and we were a little early since it never mattered what time our plans were to Fanny, only that I got him out of her hair exactly at 12 every other Saturday. I pulled into an illegal spot in front of the building and looked around. There wasn't a meter maid in sight, and I'd only be a few minutes. My free pass on parking tickets had expired when I stopped calling the cute meter maid I'd gone out with a few times. Just have to run upstairs to pick up the tickets from the drawer in my office.
Cool! We never come here. Do you still have Miss Pac-Man in that big room?
We do, but we don't have time for a game today. Lucas pouted.
Just one, please.
I was such a sucker. Fine, one game. There were a few people milling around the office, even though it was Saturday. I was relieved to find Annalise wasn't one of them. Her door was shut and no light came from under the doorway. I didn't want another confrontation with her in front of Lucas. God knows I'd worked hard over the years to keep him from seeing the asshole I often was the other 6 days of the week. I unlocked my office and went to my desk drawer, only to find the tickets weren't where I'd thought I'd stashed them. I remembered bringing them here with a batch of bills I needed to pay. I could have sworn I'd tucked them in the top right drawer. After a few minutes of searching my desk, it became clear they weren't here at all. Shit.
I hope they were somewhere in my apartment and I hadn't inadvertently shredded them with my junk mail. I looked at the time on my phone. If we left now, we'd be cutting it close. But the arena was in the opposite direction of my apartment. There was no way we'd make it if I drove all the way to my place first. Worse, I had no idea where I'd put the tickets, if they were even there. I sighed. I don't know what I did with the tickets. I'm going to have to call Ticketmaster and find out if they can send me an electronic version or something.
Can I go play Miss Pac-Man while you do that?
Yeah, sure. That's a good idea. It could take me a while if I get stuck on hold, and I need to look up the number first. Come on, I'll take you to the bullpen. As we walked, I kept trying to retrace what I'd done with the tickets after I'd opened the envelope in my office. I remembered looking at the early admission passes with logoed lanyards and thinking that Lucas would be pumped to wear a badge around his neck. But I couldn't for the life of me recall what I'd done once I'd stuffed it all back in the envelope, which was exactly what I was focused on when I strolled into the bullpen and discovered someone was already in there. Annalise looked up. She started to smile, but then she saw my face and her lips curled to a scowl. Unexpectedly seeing her there had caught me off guard, too, which is why I stopped 3 steps into the room and caused Lucas to walk right into me.
What the heck? He whined.
Sorry, buddy. It looks like someone's working in here, so it's probably best you don't play and make noise. Lucas walked around me and looked at Annalise. She glanced at him, then me, then back to him. Offering a smile, she spoke to my little buddy.
It's fine. You're welcome to play a game while I'm in here.
Lucas didn't give me a chance to argue. He took off running for the Miss Pac-Man machine.
Great!
Annalise chuckled as she watched him. When she looked back to me, our eyes met, but whatever was on her mind was unreadable. You sure you don't mind? I need to make a call. I seem to have misplaced some tickets we need.
It's fine.
I nodded, although she didn't notice because she already had her head down, burying her face in her work. Thanks, I said. I'll just be a few minutes. Back in my office, I looked up the telephone number and dialed Ticketmaster on speakerphone. While the million prompts to push buttons droned on, I searched my desk again. Still no tickets. And of course, there wasn't a prompt for I lost my tickets, which caused me to have to wait for the last prompt to push the dreaded All other callers, please press 7. That inevitably led to a few more annoying prompts to try to identify the particular problem. Losing patience, I pushed 0 a half a dozen times in an attempt to get switched to a live customer service person, but that didn't do anything but restart me at the beginning of the prompt merry-go-round. After at least 20 minutes, I finally spoke to someone who said they'd reprint my passes, and as long as I had the credit card I'd paid with and picture identification, I could pick them up at the will call booth at the arena entrance. I hung up and immediately began thinking how Annalise was probably going to be pissed at how long I'd left Lucas playing Miss Pac-Man and think I'd done it just to distract her or something. To my surprise, she wasn't pissed off at all. In fact, she had a smile on her face and was laughing when I walked into the bullpen. She and Lucas were seated across from each other on beanbag chairs, and they were yelling random things to each other. It wasn't until I walked farther into the room that I noticed Annalise had a phone held up against her forehead. He'd gotten her to play the digital charades game I never let him beat me at.
It's big, Lucas said.
The sun,
Annalise yelled. Lucas laughed and shook his head.
Marmalade. Fruit. A big fruit. Cantaloupe. Watermelon.
Lucas made a face like she was nuts.
Scooby-Doo.
Annalise looked totally confused. So Lucas offered another hint. He pointed to me.
Bennett wanted to be one when he grew up.
It took even me a few seconds to realize the word he was trying to get her to guess. She was never going to get it. Not with those clues. The phone buzzed, indicating the time for her turn was up, and she lowered her phone and turned it to read the word Lucas had been giving her hints about. Her entire face wrinkled up.
A Great Dane? What does marmalade have to do with a dog?
I chuckled and answered for him. Nothing. He meant Marmaduke.
The old cartoon strip?
Yeah.
But he said you wanted to be one when you grew up?
I shrugged. I did. Annalise laughed.
You wanted to be a Great Dane?
Don't knock it. He's king of the canine family. God, when she smiled, it made my chest hurt. But when she smiled and laughed with Lucas, even at my expense, it really did something to me.
I watched as her laughter died down and her face returned to sadness, almost as if she'd forgotten what a dick I was for a minute.
I also beat her at Miss Pac-Man and foosball.
She hasn't had as much practice as I have. Annalise just started at this office. Lucas stood.
Did you get new tickets?
Yeah, we can pick them up at the door.
You want to come, Anna?
He said.
I'll give you my earplugs.
She offered a sincere smile. Thanks for the offer, Lucas, but I have a lot of work to do today. He jammed his hands into his pockets.
Okay.
Annalise avoided my gaze, looking down at her phone. You ready, buddy? I asked.
Yep.
He ran to the door rather than walking. The kid had a shitload of energy. I waited for Annalise to look up, but she didn't. Eventually, I spoke to the top of her head. Thanks for hanging out with him. I wanted to say I was sorry for last night, too, but the timing wasn't right. Plus, I'd apologized for a half dozen other times I'd acted like an asshole already. I wasn't sure she'd accept it this time, or that I even deserved her to.
Chapter 21. November 1st. Dear me, so far, eighth grade sort of sucks. I'm taller than almost all the boys. No one asked me to the Halloween dance, so I went with Bennett. He didn't want to dress up, but I made him be Clark Kent. He wore some nerdy glasses and a dress shirt with a Superman shirt underneath. I went as Wonder Woman. My friends all think Bennett is hot and were jealous, so that was fun. For my birthday, Bennett and his mom took me to the Monster Truck Show. Mom's new boyfriend, Kenny, sells stuff at the concession stand, so we got free hot dogs and sodas. The landlord is trying to kick us out of our house again. Mom lost her job at the diner and says we're probably going to have to move. I hope it's not too far. I love my English teacher, Mrs. Hoyt. She said my poems have a lot of potential and wanted to enter some in a contest. But the entry fee was $25, and Mom said we have better uses for our money. Mrs. Hoyt surprised me and entered me anyway. She said the school had a fund to help out for things like that. But I have a feeling it was really Mrs. Hoyt's money that paid. So I dedicate this poem to you, Mrs. Hoyt. Flowers will wither. Love blossoms in the warm sun. Cold comes way too soon. This letter will self-destruct in 10 minutes. Anonymously, Sophie.
Chapter 22. I couldn't stop thinking about Annalise all day. Luckily, Lucas didn't seem to notice since he was busy eating a giant tub of popcorn, two hot dogs, and a soda large enough to fill a sink basin. We had third row seats, so the roar of the trucks and our earplugs also kept us from talking much. With nothing to do but sit in my seat, I couldn't stop obsessing over Annalise's face when I'd walked out of the bullpen earlier. She'd moved past angry and now settled in on hurt. God, I'm such a dick. After the show was over, Lucas and I were walking to the car in the parking lot when my phone buzzed with a text. Cindy. Now there's a name I hadn't thought about in a while. It had been a few months since we'd had any contact. Cindy was a flight attendant I'd met on a business trip last year. She lived on the East Coast, and we'd hooked up a few times, twice while I was in New York City and once while she was out here. Apparently, she was in town tonight on an unexpected layover and wanted to know if I could go out. Go out meant a quick dinner and then staying in her hotel room all night. It was probably exactly what I needed. A sure thing good time. Simple, no complications. Relief from some pent-up frustrations. Yet I tucked my phone into my pocket and didn't immediately text back. I'd call her after I drove Lucas home. But after I dropped him off, I knew I needed to take care of something before I made plans with Cindy tonight. I owed Annalise an apology, and that should come before my good time. So I drove to the office. It was nearly 5 o'clock, so I had no idea if she'd still be there. She'd probably come in early this morning to get a jump on the day. It was Saturday, after all. Yet I took the drive over anyway. The area around the office was commercial and became a ghost town on the weekends, even more so at night. So the closer I drove and the more empty parking spots I passed, the less I thought she'd still be at the office. Until I hit our street and saw a sole car in the parking lot. One that looked exactly like mine. The lights were off in the reception area until the motion-activated system flickered them on. A few people had been working earlier today in various departments, but as I passed through the hallways now, the entire floor seemed to have emptied out. Every office was either dark or